Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Pauline Osaroff and Ida Kaplan interviewing Mr. Herman Passamanic. Mr. Passamanic has been the director of the YMNWHA in Pittsburgh for most of his life, and his interview should follow very shortly.
For example, I don't know whether you had siblings or had brothers and sisters. If you do, there's a lot to say. If you don't, there's a word to say.
Well, let me start with my father and mother. I mean, they came over here from Russia, from Rostov. Jews were not allowed to live in Rostov in those years. And my father was permitted to live there because he was a tailor for the army. And that's how we got our name, because in the course of his tailoring, he made uniforms for the army with all the gold braid. And over there, he was a Posmanchik. And from Posmanchik, when they came over here, we got the name Passamanic.
That's now, why you're the only one in the family.
Posmanchik, if you look up Passamantery in the dictionary, you'll find that it means laces and embroideries and things of that sort. So that's how we got our name, Passamanic, from the French word Passamantery. Well, I came from a pretty good-sized family. I was born in this country, but my father and mother came over here with I think, 7 children. Some of them practically grown because they left Europe, they left Russia, so that the sons, the older sons, would not have to go into the army. Now, is this the kind of stuff you want or not?
Yes, I mean,
am I going into it too deeply, huh?
Kathy, go into it as deeply as you like. That's very interesting. It so happens that my mother's family were allowed to live in St. Petersburg for the same reason, because they had a linen shop. So it's the same thing all over again.
In that case, I'll go ahead, yeah. Because the word of the law. Oh, yeah. Now, my folks came in, I noticed in the book that people came from New York, they came to Philadelphia. Well, my folks arrived in the United States in Philadelphia. And my father had a brother in Richmond, Virginia. So that's where they landed. And that's where I was born, in Richmond, Virginia. And also an older sister who is still living. The two of us are still living. My sister Sarah, she's 86 now. And she's living in Richmond, Virginia with one of her daughters. And from Richmond, Virginia, after a few years, I don't know, I was born in Richmond. After a few years, as a young child, I was taken to Louisville, Kentucky, where I grew up. In Louisville, Kentucky, I spent 26 years, until I was 27 years old. And I mean, I went to school there. I went to grade school. And this is going to be embarrassing for the city of Pittsburgh because I didn't go to high school, I didn't go to college.
Well, you're a self-educated man, and which is very important.
When Pittsburgh finds out that grade school education ran the YMHA for almost 30 years, they're going to have a fit.
Well, I think that they'll have a great deal of respect for what you've done for yourself in the way of self-education, because I have found out that everything I learned was after I got out of school, not while I was in school.
Well, in any case, I grew up in Louisville, and about the age of 13, after my bar mitzvah, I had to go to work. My folks were tailors, and my older brothers were getting married already and having families of their own. I was next to the last of nine children. I had one younger sister, and it was just necessary that I go to work. So they wanted to make a tailor out of me, which for a number of years they almost did. And I worked in a clothing factory. And all the time I was working in the clothing factory, I was working all my spare time as a volunteer at the YMHA in Louisville, Kentucky, which was one of the first YMHAs in the United States. And while I was working in the YMHA in Louisville, Kentucky, I used to write a page in the Chronicler of Louisville, Kentucky, every month, called Passings by Passing. Now, this is the sort of thing, you know, and this whole page I used to write, you know, humorous things and crazy things, and a few verses and, you know, this and that. And this came to the attention of Jacob Billikoff. You wouldn't know that name, would you?
I remember Jacob Billikoff.
Jacob Billikoff.
Billy. No, I can't. I'm going to stop it.
All right.
I'm going to stop it.
Yes. Yes. Record.
That you want me to. We are Ida Kaplan and well, we're continuing now, Patsy. So, would you tell us some more? This is very exciting. I never knew whether you had one sister or a brother, or whether what kind of family.
You want to know all of that too?
Anything that you'd like to tell us.
I have four brothers and three sisters. There were four sisters, but one of the sisters was killed by a horse car in Louisville, Kentucky, when she was a very young child. So that we grew up three sisters and four brothers. There were eight of us. We grew up together. And
about your home atmosphere, was it a religious home?
Oh, yes, you want to know about that. My mother was a very religious woman. My father was a religious man, that is, he observed everything, but I don't think he was quite as religious as my mother. My mother was a very pious woman, and she adhered strictly to all the Orthodox rules and laws, and according to the kashrut and the synagogue and all of that. But she was very, very religious.
Did she wear a shaitel too?
No, she didn't wear a shaitel.
Well, such things as the economic, you did tell us about.
Yeah, well, we had the struggle. I mean, those years it was depression, just like they're on now. I mean, there was trouble all the time, I mean, to make a living. My father didn't make too much of a good living, so his sisters worked and I worked and they all worked. But we got along all right. I mean, there wasn't poverty. I mean, we always had enough to eat.
And you apparently had a harmonious life.
We had a very pleasant family life. And they all grew up and the sisters all got married. And they all had families. And, you know, like in every large family, and they stayed in Louisville, Kentucky, by the way, most of them, and they just stayed there.
You stayed there until you came to Pittsburgh?
I stayed there until I was 27 years old, and that's where I was beginning to tell you about this material came to the attention of Jacob Billikoff. Jacob Billikoff was one of the foremost social workers in the United States. He was the man that ran the first war relief campaign for $10 million. He's the man that went to Julian Rosenwald and had him give $1,000, pledge $1,000, if Jacob Billikus could go through the country and raise $9 million more for a $10 million war relief campaign unprecedented in the history of Jewry in the United States of America. And Billikus did that. But that was after the end of the war. I came to, I was still in Louisville. Jacob Billikus came through Louisville, Kentucky, and talked to Dr. Buchstaber. Dr. Buchstaber was director of the Y in Louisville, Kentucky, and he wound up later as rabbi in Harrisburg. Did you ever hear from him in Harrisburg?
No.
No, anyway. Dr. Buchstaber became the rabbi. He was a rabbi. We call him Dr. Buchstaber. And he was a rabbi in Harrisburg after he left Louisville, Kentucky. Well, anyway, he asked, after seeing some of these things, he asked Buchstaber if he thought that Passamaquoddy could run a YMHA, could organize and run. Well, when I... at the YMHA in Louisville, I was active in everything. I was the president of this, and counselor for this, and, you know, and active in the gymnasium. I in all types of athletics in the gymnasium, and basketball, and handball, and gymnastics, and everything, and everybody. And if he thought I could... he had been evaluated for Kansas City YMHA, which was just being organized at that time. They had raised some money, not very much, they had raised some money, and they had plans of getting a building. And Billikus needed a man to get the thing organized. So Buchstaber gave me a very, very strong recommendation, and Billikus hired me for $100 a month, $25 a month, $100 a month. I left my job where I was making more than that, and I went out to Kansas City to be director of a YMHA. In those years, you didn't need a degree, you didn't need anything to become a director of a Y. Jack Nadel was up in New York, he was a pin boy in the bowling alley at the YMHA in New York.
He's still living, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I think
Mary
talks about
it. He's still living, yeah.
They're still friends.
Yeah, he's still living. And so I went out to Kansas City, and I was in Kansas City from 1918, November 1918, until November 1925. And in those years, we created a fine membership in the Jewish community. We built a building, very nice building, on one of the main boulevards in the city. And you'll remember when they had the dinner for me when I was here 25 years, Jake Lowry, who was president of the Y all the years that I was there. He came here to speak on my behalf.
Thank you. I don't think anything ever happened that involved you that isn't I can guess.
So, I was there 8 years, and then Harry Glitzman, who was director of executive director of the National Jewish Welfare Board. Wrote me in New York asking me if I could go to Pittsburgh to be director of the YMHA. Well, that created a big fuss in Kansas City. They did not want me to leave. And one man, a man by the name of Adler, Bernard Adler, refused to finish paying his contribution to the building fund because I left because he said that I promised I if they built a building I would stay in Kansas City. and he was pretty sore. But anyway, I accepted the offer because Harry Glickman said that I was the only man available. Not that I was the best man for the job, really, but I was the only man available because I was single. Everybody else was married and would mean a lot of problems for married couples that know to move and all that sort of thing. It's much easier now, but it's a little more difficult then. And I accepted and I came here to Pittsburgh in 1925.
Weren't you interviewed also by my father?
No.
You weren't?
I was probably interviewed. I came here in the fall of 1925 to be interviewed by the Central Board. Now maybe your father was at that meeting. I don't know for sure. Maybe he was at that meeting. But I came here, and you know how I came here? It was very interesting. A friend of mine in Kansas City was coming here to the World Series in 1925. And he said, "Patsy, would you like to go to the World Series?" I said, "Sure, I'd like to go." He says, "Well, the World Series will be in Pittsburgh." I said, "Well, I have to go to Pittsburgh anyway." So that's when I came here for the World Series. I met a lot of people. But that isn't the time I came for the interview. But anyway, that was my first introduction to Pittsburgh, to take a look at the city. And the only person I knew in Pittsburgh at that time was Virginia Klein. She had been out to Kansas City sometime, and I met her, and you know the restaurant, Virginia Klein from the restaurant?
Yes.
And I went over to the Klein's restaurant and met those people, and anyway, I went to the World Series, and we had a good time. I went back to Kansas City and finished up my work there, and came back here. And same thing happened here. I mean, there wasn't anything here when I came. The building wasn't completed. It was a mess. The town was so dirty, and so the Kansas City was such a clean city. I was sick that whole first winter. Gee, I could have turned around and gone right back if they hadn't already had a replacement for me. I was gone right back to Kansas City. But I stuck it out. I was sick most of the winter. And Rosella Harvest was already the secretary there. She was already working. And we had to have an office in the Y building in order to keep from paying taxes. The building had to be used in order to keep from paying taxes. So we used it. We put an office in there. And that's where I operated out of the YMH until the building was completed in 1926 when it was dedicated.
Well, you're going to tell us a great deal more about the why, and according to the sequence of our questioning, it comes a little bit later. So I wonder if you would like at this point to tell us how Pittsburgh compared to the city that you were leaving and that you seem to be very happy in. You did say there was a great contrast.
I've already told you that my first comparison was pretty bad. I mean, it was negative as far as Pittsburgh was concerned, because Pittsburgh was a dirty, filthy, smoky town, and I was sick practically that whole winter. But I had to work. I mean, there were so many things to do. We were just getting the building ready. I had to hire a staff. I had to make up all the forms. I had to do all the work in connection with, because there was really no organization when I came here. You know, there was nothing. There were a few members, a few people who were interested in the Y. The Central Board, of course, they held the first thing. And Harry Appelstein and Rick Pally and a few others, they had part of an organization, I mean, with a few members, but it didn't amount to very much. There was hardly any dues being paid. And the first thing we had to do was plan a big membership campaign as soon as the building was open, which we did. And I.D. Wolf was the first chairman of the membership.
Before they moved to the building, which is still now the Y, it seems that I remember that they met at a place called the Coffee Club.
No.
No? Well, where did
the Miami J was first located in down in a building on Fifth Avenue called the Dispatch Building. They had a floor on the third floor, I think, or the second floor. But from there, they moved into a building which they bought on Germanville, on Fifth and Germanville Street.
I remember that.
It's still there. The building is still there. Yeah.
They had party wall houses there, I remember, and they played basketball out in the front, and they're still doing it. That building is still standing, incidentally.
And they moved from Germanville Street. I mean, they gave that up. Went to the new building on Garfield Avenue.
Well, when did the Y actually open? When was it dedicated? We have a picture at the Y of the cornerstone being laid, and you were in it, and my father was in it, and I think Dr. Goldenson, he must have given the invocation, and lots of very important members of the Jewish community. Well-to-do members were in that picture.
Well, the building was dedicated in the spring. I forget now whether it was May or June, but it was dedicated in the spring of 1926.
So it took a year.
About 8 months working in that soldier building until we got the thing all cleaned up. And
Rosella Horvitz worked with you too.
Rosella Horvitz worked with me all the time.
The whole time, imagine.
We had to organize the staff. We had to bring people here from other cities. We had to do all the work in connection with building an organization. I mean, it's just too much to describe. I mean, the kind of work that has to be done to open a whole new building, get the thing equipped, all the equipment, and the bookkeeping, the membership campaign, the physical education department, the whole thing. I mean, I had to get staff people for everything that we had to do. We brought in Edith Lazarus was the women's physical director, brought in Bill Kolodny. By the way, Bill Kolodny is now in a nursing home in New York. He's a very sick man. But he organized the Ida Cedar Education Center.
From the very beginning.
And we had an education center in the Y. I mean, it was outstanding. It was the only thing of its kind in the YMHAs in the whole of the United States. And I remember when Jeff Nadel talked about the Ida Cedar Education Center, the YMHA in Pittsburgh. He used to say, "We don't need education in the Y. We don't need educational centers. We don't need that kind of thing. You know, it's a recreational institution, that sort of thing." So, during the Depression, when we had to let Kolodny go because we couldn't pay his salary, they hired him in New York, and he built an educational department in the 92nd Street YMHA, second to none in the United States, and he has made such a reputation for himself. It's too bad he's a sick man now, but it was just tremendous. I mean, the accomplishments of that man. And I understand that at the Jewish Welfare Board biennial, he's going to be given the Frank Weil Award. I don't know whether he'll be able to go there for it or whether he'll be able to go there for it.
Patsy, I understand that his son is at the educational center.
I heard that too, but
Marie told me that.
I heard that too, but somewhere I read something about the education department. Why with another name? And I don't know whether he's still there or not. I don't correspond with those people except very seldom. I like to call over once in a while, but I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's two new generations now.
Well, we brought Kolodny here. We brought Edith Lazarus here. We brought a man by the name of Cher, who was our physical director in the first year. We brought Miriam Ephraim here later, who became one of the foremost people in this country. And
I think Miriam, too, was self-educated in the field of social work.
She was in camping at first. She was in camping first. And I don't know. I don't remember too much about her. I don't talk about her. She's a brilliant woman.
Oh, well.
So whatever it is, she has.
Yes. Well, she once said, she said to me once, and I'm not a trained social worker, but I helped to write the book.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very cute way of expressing it.
Well, we in the first year in the membership campaign, we enrolled more than 5,000 members in the Y. And we had an organization going that was marvelous and beautiful. In the first 10, 15 years of the YMHA, it was everything that the community expected was realized in what happened at the Y. Every organization in the city met there. All the kids, there were programs, activities for everybody in the community. And it was just a remarkable, it was the busiest place in the whole city, probably in the whole country as far as YMHA is concerned. On Saturday nights and Sunday nights, you couldn't get into the building. It was so crowded. It was just terrific.
Today, people say to me, when I worked with the single parents, who were a group of unattached men and women who were raising their children alone, and every once in a while, when I handled adult activities, I would try to have a dance. What they always said was, this isn't the way it used to be. When Patsy was here, we had a dance every Saturday night. And the place was jammed.
You couldn't get into the
place. No, and many of us met our husbands and our wives there. That was the place to go. And it didn't matter where you came from, no matter how many streetcars you had to take.
You went to the Y.
You went to the Y. That was the place to go.
That's right. In those years, in the first 10, 15 years of the Y, and it was the busiest place in the world until World War II. From 1926 until 1939 or 40, those 14 years, 15 years, were marvelous at the Y. But after World War II, it began to shift. People moved out of the area. You see, in the first years of the Y on Belfield Avenue, Pitt did not have any evening classes. Schenley High School had no evening classes. All the evening classes were at the Y. And we had Harvey Gall, who organized and conducted that choral society. We had Fred Lispelt, who did the dancing classes. Music. Fred Lispelt did the music. We had this man, I forget his name. Do you remember the man that used to do the dancing?
I can't remember his
name.
Lived until just a few years ago. He was still trying to conduct the dancing classes.
And who are these?
Maybe I'll remember.
And who are these dancers on television?
The Tamberitsons?
Two brothers who went to...
Draper and Adler?
No, two brothers who went to California.
Kelly. Eugene Kelly.
The two Kelly brothers taught the dancing at the Y. I was on a train on a once going to California, when a man walked up to me and he said, "Aren't you Pastor Manning from the Wild?" He said, "I'm Gene Kelly." So we had the Kellys, and we had another man who taught dancing at the Y after the Kellys left. I forget his name after. But anyway, we had a marvelous staff. We had the Stouts. We had the first good playhouse in the city of Pittsburgh. The Y Playhouse was marvelous. They did marvelous plays. And Frank Stout and his wife, he did the scenery and she did the directing. And we just had the best people. Kolodny went out and found the best people in the community, best people in the city, to do their specialties at the Y. Dancing, acting, whatever, music, everything.
Well, it was a feather in your cap if you could qualify. Because I can remember with the Y Choral, we had to have tryouts.
Yeah.
And you weren't accepted in the Y Choral until after you did a solo. And one thing that I was very much impressed with was that nobody came and said, "I can't afford to pay dues." Somehow or other, they always managed to pay the dues, and they weren't too high then.
You mean in the choral?
In the choral, I know you had some scholarships.
Well, we had trouble collecting dues. Don't kid yourself.
But
we had plenty of trouble.
But in the choral, I know that we walked in and we handed our $6 or whatever it was.
Of course, and I haven't mentioned the health club, which we organized, and the man that we had in charge. Frank Altmark. He's still there, by the way.
Yes, he is. He's probably
75
by now.
He wasn't the director of the health club at the beginning. We had another man. But the other man was there just about 2 or 3 years, and Frank took over, and he's been there all these years.
But was that something unique for a while, to have a health club of that type now with all the saunas that's gotten to be the vogue?
Well, I don't know if there were any health clubs anywhere else in the country. I know we had one. It wasn't a very good one. It was on the second floor. It's not the one we have now. But no one in the country has a health club like ours now. I mean, this is the finest health club in the whole United States, insofar as the land of the is concerned, and probably one of the nicest anywhere, with all the saunas and all the spas and everything else. I mean, we have them. Marvelous health club. They put in a new whirlpool now, and I mean, there's everything that you want in the Y health club.
Well,
I'd
like to hear some more and I'm sure Ida would too. Because
I didn't tell you about the music system.
No.
Well, when I prepared a budget, Edgar Kaufman was chairman of the budget committee in those years. Harry Appleton was the president. When I prepared a budget and a program which tied them together. I mean, we needed so much money for this and so much money for that and so much money for this. And I went up to Edgar Kaufman's office one day with a budget and with a program. And he looked it over and the budget and everything, and he came to the Y Music Society. He said, "What is this?" I said, "Well, I thought we'd bring some artists to Pittsburgh and have a music series." He says, "But we already have a music series in Pittsburgh." I said, "But I don't want that kind of music series, because they only bring the old, same old people all the time. It's the same few people every year. And I don't want that kind of series. I want to bring new faces, new people. Rising young artists. I want to bring that kind of an artist to Pittsburgh, because I'm sure there are many, many young artists who would like to appear before audiences, and I think there are enough of them so that we could have a series every year." He says, "Well, maybe you're right. Go ahead." So we organized the music. Well, I'll tell you something about Edgar Kaufman. he used to look over my budgets, and we used to talk about these things all the time. And one day he said to me, Pastor Manning, he said, you're a good manager. He said, you're going to make a lot of decisions. If you make half of them right, you're okay. That's the kind of the man he was.
You were fortunate to have someone who was open-minded enough to give you a little
bit. He's not only open-minded, but he was willing to back some of these things, you know. He put up some money every once in a while. David Cottonwood was a good friend of mine. He was all right. I enjoyed working with him.
I think that for the record, it might be a good idea to know some of the people you brought. Because today, most of them are, well known, and they're old now, but they're still...
They're all some of the most famous of the artists. And now, I'll tell you a story about, I don't know if you were there at that time or not, about Isaac Stern.
Kathy, I came in on the music committee the second year.
Yeah.
But were you there
the day we gave Isaac Stern an audition?
No.
Do you remember a professor at his tech here by the name of Frock, Max Frock?
Yes, sure.
Max Frock came to us one day and said he had a young violinist that just couldn't get going. He couldn't get anybody to give him an audience, and he was on his uppers. And could we put him on the series? So I talked with whoever was the chairman at that time and the other people and some of the members of the committee, and we decided that we would listen to Isaac Stern. And Balder, what was her first name? Lucy.
Lucy
Balder was the accompanist, the pianist for the Y Choral Society. And we had her and some of the members of the committee. We invited the committee. I don't know whether you came or not.
No.
We invited the committee to come up and listen to Isaac Stern. An audition. It sounds so funny. An audition for Isaac Stern. And he was really great. But we couldn't put him on that season because it was already spring and it was almost the end of the season. So we promised him a concert for the following year, and he did. He appeared the first time in Pittsburgh. He appeared, I don't know, I guess we had to rent an evening suite, you know, a whole dress and all that time because it didn't have anything. And he gave an outstanding concert, and I wrote to the New York management and sent him the clipping.
Oh.
Isaac Stern about, this young man was a great violinist and they ought to give him a hearing. I wrote him a shilling worth of it, and the woman who used to come here all the time. And I guess he went to New York and he probably, they listened to him up there too, and they hired him, and he's Isaac Stern today.
So you got
now,
him
when
started.
We had Isaac Stern here a couple of years ago, I went back to the dressing room, and I introduced myself, and I said, do you remember your first concert in Pittsburgh? Do you remember when you played for us in the lodge room? He said, no, I don't remember. I know damn well he said.
Well, I know something about Isaac Stern's training, because my sister told me that one of the community workers in New York in a settlement got him started with lessons because he seemed to be so promising. Now, who it was, I don't know.
Well, I don't know how he got here to Dr. Fox, but anyway, that's the way he got started here in New York, too, so I think we had something to do with his career. But in any case, there was an article recently in the Los Angeles calendar. Now the calendar is one of the inserts in the Sunday New York Kansas City Los Angeles Times. They get out just like the New York Times section, you know, the magazine section. Well, they have a magazine section, they call it the calendar. And there was an article in there by about musicians and especially about Skirkin, in which he said that people around the country say that he gave his first American concert in New York, but that's not true. That's in that paper. That's not true. He said he gave his first American concert at the YM and WHA in Pittsburgh. And we had a lot of those people. And we brought the Pittsburgh people like, Horowitz, Milstein, Theodorsky, Garbasola. I mean, hardly any big name that you can think of, not the current crowd, in fact, there. Played in the YMA championship.
You recall how we got the Milstein?
No, I don't remember how we got him.
It was either the Piatigorsky who was scheduled, came down with appendicitis, and we got Milstein instead. And I remember Helen Rao asking, did they try ice?
We brought Marian Anderson here. And she was not allowed to stay at the Shenley Hotel. They wouldn't accept blacks there. And she stayed at Helen Rao's home. Helen Rao was the chairman in those years. And Marian Anderson gave her first concert in Pittsburgh at the Rubinstein, Arthur Rubinstein. He was already a middle-aged man. He had never been to Pittsburgh until we brought him.
Well, the May Beagle series that they were referring to in the beginning that already had artists didn't bring anybody unless they happened aesthetically to please May Beagle and her brother. And maybe they didn't want a person with a foreign accent.
Well, that could have been, but he had never been to Pittsburgh until we brought him. And now, of course, you know Arthur Rubinstein, he's the king of all the
It's interesting that they're still playing way up into their 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
but we had them in their 20s.
I guess the pianist is not so tough. The violinists, they have a little trouble, but I think the piano lends itself to that kind of thing.
And the singers are through when they're 50, usually.
Well, the music series did very well for a few years, and then it also sort of faded, but now with Sidney Stark as chairman, they had a very good year last year. They had a very good year. I was very happy to see that.
Yes, and it's going to be better again the coming year. They already have a lot of support. They've gone out after.
We also had a very fine lecture series. We had we brought people here who spoke to us about five or six every season. And that was all right for quite a number of years, and then that faded out. People got tired of listening to people talk about it.
Well, I think the television can be blamed for that, because we never had an opportunity to hear people like Max Lerner and people of that caliber.
I think...